The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Big Christmas blowout begins. Man City beat Gunners in stunner. Martinez leaves Chelsea on the rocks. We round up the big games and the big midweek action to come, like Spurs-Chelsea and that big Blackburn-Bolton clash with Keane and Coyle stuck to the bottom and now staring their end in the face. Are they football's answer to the human centipede? Abroad, in Japan, seasonal fun as Barca get gifts from Santos and show their claws. Italy, perhaps even more exciting than usual as Roma show Chelsea how it's done at Napoli and the league prepares for that Udinese-Juve showdown. And all right, 17 people get arrested for match fixing. Bundesliga, in case you care, post tweets and more in Football Weekly. Sorry, make that award-winning Football Weekly. Okay. Today, big show, big panel. Here we have James Horncastle.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
How do you say Merry Christmas in German?
Frohe Weihnachten.
Of course. And Barry Glendening.
Frohe Weihnachten.
Exactly. And me, James Richardson. No, not that James Richardson.
Not the.
The trending on Twitter at last.
Yeah. James Richardson. For your magnificent achievement at Alexandra Palace last
exactly.
night.
Exactly. Yep.
Beating Raymond van Barneveld in the World Professional Darts Championship.
Exactly.
Congratulations, James Richardson.
Yep. Merited. I tell you what, while we're handing out the congratulations, Barry, Raphael just got very excited when he heard the words award-winning Football Weekly. Tell him what it's all about.
Well, we were lucky enough to win the best podcast at the NOPA Awards last week, which are the not 100% awards arranged by PickLive Sports. And we saw some sort of stiff competition and won for the second year in a row.
What, dead people? Or what?
Yeah, but...
The No Hope Awards.
Yes. But, yeah.
We like that. We can laugh about it, you know?
I thought James Dart brought the award home with him. He thought I had it. And it turns out neither of us have it. So for the second year in a row, we've won the award, but don't have anything to show for it.
I thought last year Football Ramble won it.
No, we won it last year.
Oh, did we? Okay. Yeah. That's how blasé we are. We probably won loads of other awards, viewers. Listeners, have you given us a...
I don't think we have.
Have we not? Okay.
And I doubt we're going to win many more. So.
Well, yeah. Even if we do, we won't care, though. That's the thing. Right. Sean Ingle, yeah, he buttonholed me this morning. He said, Jimbo, it's the big Christmas sort out. He said that only in a more exciting fashion. The period when the champions are decided, this over Christmas spell... Is he right? And did it all start this weekend with the two Manchester sides moving five clear of the rest?
I don't know. I think only eight teams who have been top at Christmas have actually gone on to win the Premier League. So,
out of what? How many?
Yeah, out of 19, is it?
19, yeah. All right. Okay. But I think he was more specifically pointing at New Year. And Sir Alex Ferguson, another lesser-known football figure, was making a similar point today, saying, I've told my men to be... he said it... I've told my fellows to be on top on January the 1st. So, obviously, that's the key thing.
It's true. But yeah. I think Fergie also at the weekend was talking up Tottenham, wasn't he, quite a lot, saying, I think, you know, why can't they have a go at the title? I think they've been playing the best football for the last seven or eight games. Kind of a bit of a snub to City, but...
We'll come on to Tottenham in a second or two. Let's give a bit of love to City then, because it was a terrific game against Arsenal. Great entertainment. But it was a close thing, though, wasn't it? Makumi tweeting in saying, could Arsenal have beaten City with fullbacks?
I think they could. I think they could have beaten them without fullbacks. Mm. It's a game. City could have won it by a lot more. Arsenal could have won it. They were certainly hamstrung by the fact that they didn't have any fit fullbacks, which meant they were very narrow and didn't have people making galloping runs down the flanks, which would have helped. But even so... They did well, and it's amazing that game only threw up one goal. I mean, just looking at the scoreline, it would suggest it wasn't a particularly good game to watch, but it was really, really entertaining and sort of saved a Super Sunday that was kind of turning into a bit of a damp squib.
Were the other games not as exciting then?
I didn't think so, no.
Villa were in the middle of it, so...
Right. I take your point.
It's really quite incredible how open this game was yet again, another one of those... top table clashes, well, almost top table in Arsenal's terms, but it was strange because City last season were accused of being very negative. They were very, very strong in the middle, usually playing three midfielders, strangling a lot of life out of the games. And it seems to be very different this year, and I'm not sure all of it is by design. I sat at I watched the Chelsea away game, and Mancini spent most of the second half shouting at Yaya Toure, who just had stopped running and was just sort of resting 60 metres ahead of his own goal and just refused to come back. And it seems to me that there is not quite the same sort of cohesion in that side. It's almost a broken team. They try to get the ball forward and then something will happen because they've got so much quality. And then they defend with the three defenders. One of the fullbacks will usually be up as well. And they're just good enough to do it with Kompany being in majestic form. But as a team, they don't really function that well.
God, I hate to see them when they're fixed. If they're 7 points clear of everybody but Man United when they're broken. But they're that good at the front and have enough talent at the back to make up for any wobbly bits in the middle. A lot of people pointed to Yaya Toure in his upcoming absence for the Africa Cup of Nations as being the bit where it could all go wrong for City. By your theory, then, it might actually be where things come back together.
Well, maybe, but the problem is, signing Owen Hargreaves was an indication that Mancini felt that there's actually perhaps not enough depth in that position. And I'm not sure Hargreaves can be the answer with his physical condition. De Jong has fallen out of favour. So, maybe they do have to go actually back into the transfer market and get someone because they're a little bit light in that department.
If the question was who's played less games of late than Kieran Dyer, he might be. Of course, but anyway, well, interesting. They've got Stoke at home. Stoke on a roll, on fire.
Yeah, four wins in a row.
Crouchy,
back post header.
They'll be lucky enough to have Jonathan Woodgate, who wasn't sent off on Saturday, but probably should have been, and so should have been that his manager decided to do the decent thing and substitute him before he was, I think, after 17 minutes, which is a rather ignominious way to end the game, or your involvement. But, he should have got a red card or a second yellow, but was lucky enough not to. But it's difficult to see Stoke. It's difficult to see anyone stopping City,
I thought you were saying it's difficult to see Stoke.
I could have just ended the sentence there.
But do you not think that Arsenal showed that, going all out and attacking City? It's interesting because it's exactly the opposite approach that we've seen from other teams who've been successful against. I mean, it was so nearly, and it so nearly yielded a point. I mean, Van Persie's goal was a marginal offside decision, I think.
Yeah, and there possibly could have had a penalty. I thought originally it was a penalty, the Micah Richards handball.
I was
but
more
then
concerned
Rob
the tackle
Smythe
on Walcott,
sort of talked me out of it today, and we were studying it, and the ball took a deflection before it hit his arm, and he was trying to remove his arm, so... I would say it was probably the correct decision, but I've seen them given for a lot less.
I think if Van Persie's goal had been given, people would have been talking about watching the replay back. They'd have been saying he's just onside. It's one of those either or. If the decision had gone his way, it'd be yes, the linesman's got it right there. He's just onside. Whereas because it's not gone in, we're still in the dark about that, still debating.
And City are still 2 points clear of Man United. Now, Peter from Iceland on our Facebook page. I got 5 reasons why Man United will finish top of the league and not Man City. He says and lists indeed 5 reasons. I like lists of 5. Lists of 5 are big in football analysis now. Everyone's got 5 things we learnt from this, that and the other.
Well, is it everyone or just us?
No, other people are doing it too.
I don't know. It seems as good a number as any. Could go 6. Although I think on Football 365 today they had 16 things they learned.
That's inflation.
And that was just from one game. So that's a lot of education.
What game was it they'd learned so much from?
Arsenal Man City.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know what they were? What was number 16? I bet they were really scraping the barrel by that point.
No, it's
they were all good things.
I like their stuff. It's good.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, too, but 16 is a lot of points. Anyway, Peter from Iceland could only muster 5, poor old Sam.
Poor effort.
He says, 5 reasons why Man United will finish top of the league and not Man City. Man City's manager is not that special. Fergie knows how to do it. City lack experience when it comes to leading the league. Yaya Toure will go to the Africa Cup of Nations and will be there for up to 6 weeks. Silva Nguera will slow down over the coldest winter months, similar to Deco. And United are always much better in the new year than before Christmas. That's the point I think that's interesting. This is United's time of the year when they get all Scrooge-like and give everybody else a hell.
Yeah, and they seem to be coping with certain problems better than people might have expected
Which problems are we talking about there?
Well, in midfield, Jones did very well against alongside Carrick yesterday. Or was it Saturday? I can't remember.
Yesterday.
And likewise, I thought that...
I don't know what they're doing on Saturday. Perhaps he did well alongside him then as well.
Yeah. Well.
Sorry, that's not helpful. On we go.
But, you know, we were talking about United have a sort of burgeoning injury crisis. Hernandez was back sooner than expected yesterday. And even though, say, Evra had a torrid time at left back in the first half, he seemed to pick up quite well in the second half as well. So they've reacted well. I think that was only the second time in over 3 years that United have named an unchanged starting 11. And I think it's perhaps this time of the year it's important to have that sort of consistency where you're playing, you know, four or five games in the space of, what, 10 days, 10 or 12 days. And I think even though I think their upcoming fixtures are actually, I'd say, a little bit easier than City's. City have got teams which are firmly in mid-table, which could cause them problems, be it Stoke, West Brom and Sunderland, whereas United have two of the bottom three coming up in the next three. So
they start off with Fulham at Craven Cottage.
Yeah.
Well, Barry, what kind of record do they have away to Fulham?
I'm glad you asked me that, James. It's not very good, actually.
Isn't it?
Fulham have won two of their last three at home to Manchester United and drawn the other one.
Do you see that record continuing this week?
No, I don't. Right. We were filming our little bits end-of-year review last week, and I actually picked Fulham as a sort of an outside bet to go down and this season. But then they sort of made an idiot of me by winning on Saturday, a game I didn't think they would prevail in. But I can give Peter from Iceland two very good reasons why Manchester United won't win the league this season.
All right, then.
The first being that I think every single Guardian football writer tipped them to win the league at the start of the season, and we always get these things wrong. And the second, there's a very good chance that Sir Alex Ferguson's head will quite literally explode once the interview Roy Keane gave to the Sunday Times yesterday is brought to his attention. I imagine his face or his countenance will go a shade of purple. That
not unlike the knitwear you're wearing at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. That hasn't even featured on the Dulux colour chart
really?
Yet. Yeah.
Give us one or two of the finer points that Keane makes.
People say Sir Alex Ferguson always does what's best for Manchester United. But I disagree. He does what's best for himself. And then he mentioned the horse business, which we've said before in the pod that a lot of United's financial woes can be traced back to the row Fergie had with the Irish, the Coolmore Murphia, over the stud fees of this racehorse, Rock of Gibraltar. And
a racehorse that he was given, but then sued them over the stud rights to.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was in the wrong there. There was never an issue that they were going to give him millions and millions of pounds worth of stud fees. And Keane also mentioned that Fergie had tried to sue him, or Manchester United tried to sue him. He gave an interview.
Sue Roy Keane?
Yes. He gave an interview to the Irish Times after he was turfed out of Old Trafford. And soon afterwards got solicitors' letters from the club threatening to sue him unless they got an apology and a retraction. And because he said they'd been dishonest with him. But he never apologised, and they kept sending solicitors letters, but eventually let the matter drop.
The horse thing was seen as the beginning of the exit of Manier and what was Manier's partner?
J.P. McManus.
McManus, right, okay. That was the thing that precipitated their exit, and thus the Glazers' arrival at Old Trafford, which I think most people would agree wasn't necessarily the most beneficial for the club. But, well, listen, just returning quickly then to Fulham, you think Fulham are going to go down, possibly. Are they going to beat United? Are they going to scupper United's title run?
I think they've got a decent chance to get at least a draw against United. I think they look quite good in recent weeks, especially at home.
Brian Rees?
Looking better, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he's finding his feet. And Dembele is a fantastic player. I mean, his progress has been halted by the horrible injury he had last year. But I think over the last 1.5 seasons, he's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, now you've got a 5-point gap between United and the rest of them. Chelsea, of course, drawing at Wigan, and they face Spurs on Thursday. You know, we've seen early high flyers beginning to get their wings clipped a bit. Newcastle starting to slide. Are Tottenham going to be the next team to disappear from the top positions? I know you have Sir Alex talking them up, but they've got a lot of players absent for that game on Thursday.
I think Bale sprained his ankle. Lennon hurt himself early on.
He's out for months, is that right?
For weeks.
Oh, weeks.
I think. And also I think King's a doubt for this one as well. Spurs have won six in a row at home. So the confidence is certainly running high. But no, I think this will be a stern test for them, because even after that, they're playing Norwich and Swansea, two promoted sides who have given decent accounts of themselves this year. Certainly haven't been rolled over, really, by anyone.
Harry Redknapp was talking about the absence of speed that their absence will mean for his team.
Yeah, I think against Sunderland at the weekend, he tried Modric and Van der Vaart out wide, and it didn't really work. He changed it at half-time, brought them into the middle. And that's where their goal came from. So I think, whereas Spurs have given off the impression this year that they can come at you from all sides, those sort of weapons, that part of their game has been taken away from them. So perhaps they'll be a little bit more predictable against Chelsea. But even so, when you've got someone like Modric and Van der Vaart in the middle, then...
Mind you, Chelsea could only manage a draw away to Wigan. What's going on there, Rafael?
Well, it's been the same story, really, for most of the season. They just cannot raise themselves against lesser teams. They've been okay at home in the bigger games, but they just find it difficult to grind out results this year. And I'm not quite sure what it's down to. I mean, obviously, you can argue that their main strength has been taken away somewhat, which was sort of that brute force in midfield that would just overpower teams, just run at them and kept running at them until they eventually overran them, without Essien, without Lampard, who's not himself, or is not the Lampard of old, even when he's on the pitch. They don't quite have that, and they're very reliant on somebody like Drogba putting in a sort of superstar performance on his own to actually really trouble teams.
And that man, Daniel Sturridge, another cracking goal.
He's been saving their blushes. He's been probably their most consistent performer this season throughout the team, which says a lot for him, but probably more for the rest of the team, if you want to be a bit critical. And I don't see them in the ascendancy necessarily. I think they've sort of stabilised at a, to use a Vierge Boas term, a medium block level. they're not very impressive.
Their record at White Hart Lane isn't good. They haven't won there since 2005, I think. They've lost three and drawn two.
What else did Rob Smythe tell you about this game, Barry?
So Rob Smythe is able to give you these stats off the top of his head without even checking.
There's been plenty coming off the top of his head, of course, of late. No, it's a baldness joke. I'm allowed to make those.
Yeah. I thought you meant his green bobble hat.
Oh, yeah, that has come off. Wigan could have won that game, you know. Let's give Wigan a bit of love. Jordi Gomez, 4 goals in 5. They picked up 7 points in 4 games. It might be more than that, actually.
I was very impressed with them, actually, because when they got that late equaliser, they didn't sort of sit back and try to defend it and just get the point. They actually went for the game and could have won. Mm. And that would have been a major shocker.
Although Cech's mistake was a major shocker, too. I mean, that goal should have never been scored.
Yeah, even though... I think there was the claim that he was unsighted by Cole. I think his form this season has been concerning. I think if you look at the Arsenal game, he was at fault for most of the... Certainly Van Persie's beaten at his near post twice. I think at some stage, his shot to save percentage was something like 41%, which is the worst in the Premier League. So, I mean, the thing is, Chelsea are conceding fewer shots on goal, I think, this year than they have been previously, but if they're playing this high line, which perhaps they haven't been recently, they're leading to situations which are perhaps more dangerous for Czech to face, one-on-ones, etc. Although the Wigan goal was certainly not that.
All right. Well, Wigan anyway moved to 1 point now off safety. Oh, exciting stuff. Behind them, of course, Blackburn and Bolton, who meet on Tuesday night. What a big game that is. We'll talk more about that very shortly. Before that, another big match at the weekend was, of course, the World Clubs World Cup thing in Yokohama, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yes.
Over in Japan, a long way away. We'll be dialing up Sid Lowe to hear him ranting and raving about that after this. All right, part two begins in dramatic but quite traditional fashion with Sid Lowe on a train. Sid, this line might go at any second.
Well, I hope not, because then the train will crash.
Yeah, I meant the telephone line, but it's a fair point you make. So
That's
much
quite likely, yeah.
Well, so much we need to talk about. Is he gone? Sid?
No, I'm still here. Yes, right. There is a lot to talk about,
yes.
A hell of a lot.
All right, we were waiting to see Neymar play against Messi, and we're still waiting, Sid.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness to Neymar, I don't think this game would have proven anything one way or the other. I don't think it necessarily does prove anything one way or the other, because Barcelona have a bit of a habit of making very good teams and very good players look really quite average.
Yeah, well, I imagine there's been all sorts of excited reaction, though, from the Catalan press to this 4-0 win.
Yeah, of course, and not least because there's been, I think, a kind of joy in seeing the response from other people, and that's quite often the case in Spain, that there's a real pride taken when the rest of the world talks highly about their teams, and in particular, I think the reaction in Brazil has been kind of really taken to heart by the Catalan media, and in particular, of course, that great quote from Neymar, where Neymar said, "Today we learned how to play football."
Mm. And what about the Madrid press? Are they being excited about it too, or did they get their front page taken up with Ronaldo scoring a hat-trick and stuff?
But in fairness to parts of the Madrid press, they've taken it as a sort of symbolic success for Barcelona, which says something not just about Barcelona, but about Spanish football. It's true that there's a kind of current opinion with the Madrid press, despite that.
Ooh. That sounds like a tunnel to me. Raphael, you were watching this game.
Yes.
Yeah, until you, like I... Oh, he's
and
back!
And of course sees the reflection of Spanish players in that. So it's actually been met reasonably well by... It's only one of the two Madrid newspapers, by the newspaper app, less so by Marca.
All right, it sounds like we missed nothing there, Sid. Ronaldo, in the meantime, they routed Sevilla 6-2. And this with just 10 men.
Yeah, and Ronaldo after the game was asked about it, and he said that was to shut people's mouths. And then he said, "But I don't mind people criticising me." So you think to yourself, "Well, which one of it is it? Which one of the two is it? Is it to shut people's mouths, or is it that you don't have people criticising you?" He then said, and I don't know if he was talking about Pelé. He then said, "Anyone who criticises me doesn't know anything about football."
All right, he's quoting Pippo Inzaghi there, isn't he?
Indeed.
Yeah, Pippo Inzaghi. Yeah. If they criticise me, it's the end of football. How right he was. But still, that's a great result for Real Madrid. Just 10 men, Sevilla. That was meant to be a really tough away game for them. They win 6-2.
Well, they were really flattered by the 6-2. It's the same result as last year as well, by the way, which is kind of bizarre. Real Madrid were flattered by the 6-2. Even Mourinho admitted that. They were extraordinarily effective with the chances they had. Sevilla weren't. Iker Casillas is another one of those saves where you just can't believe he's got there. I mean, the thing about Casillas that makes him such a good goalkeeper is the sheer speed of his movements, and that was a wonderful save. Angel Di Maria was I think the best player on the pitch again. I think he's had a really, really brilliant season. But yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo, another hat-trick, and everything's okay again, although of course it's not really okay again, is it?
No, absolutely. Listen, I don't know how you fix for tunnels, because there are various other talking points. One, the fact that Atletico are about to sack their manager. Two, you suggest the Malaga project, despite all the money pumped in, is going to fail. And you also mentioned the notion that Raul might be heading back to the Spanish national team.
It's certainly something that's being talked about. Raul got, for those who don't know, Raul playing in Germany got a hat-trick this weekend, which makes him the second top-scoring Spaniard anywhere in the world this year, behind Roberto Soldado from Valencia, neither of whom are in the Spain squad, whereas, of course, a certain Fernando Torres is. David Villa being out injured also opens up the possibility of another player. I don't think Raul will get in, but, of course, that debate has been kind of reignited. There's a great Torres statistic I saw the other day from Opta, which I just think is stunning. But Fernando Torres, when he played at Liverpool, the number of players who'd scored more goals than him was zero. Since he's been playing at Chelsea, the number
76.
Of players who scored more goals than him, 37.
Oh, I saw 76.
Oh, well, it must be. Maybe we're numerically dyslexic, one of us. Probably
no, you're right. It's probably 36. Raphael's going with you, so you're probably right. Yeah, it's an extraordinary statistic, isn't it? Hey, how about that Henok Goitom goal for Almeria?
Oh, what a beauty, eh?
I said,
really fantastic overhead kick. I'm in a tunnel, so I think I might be about to lose you, but a really fantastic overhead kick from him. And Almeria looking reasonably good to return to the first division as well.
Wow, amazing goal, Barry. You saw this, didn't you?
Yeah, fantastic.
Raphael?
Fantastic.
It was fantastic. James?
Sweet.
One other thing, Sid, we'll lose you before I get it out, but you got very excited about a picture you tweeted and how funny it was, but I don't get the joke. What was so funny about it?
I don't know which picture it was. Was it? Because it was one I took of the bloke standing on the metro. And,
yes.
And the thing about this was, this guy has been on my metro train a couple of times before, and every time I thought, oh my good God, you really, honestly, that's just all wrong. I took a picture, obviously you could only sneak this picture, and I could only get his at the bottom of him on it. So it was his trousers, his socks, and his shoes. So that's three items of clothing, and all three, frankly, he wants shooting for. So, I thought it was amusing anyway.
Sid, I have to say, you've been in Spain too long. Because if you dress like that in London, people would say, pretty snappy. Have you seen this picture, Rafael?
Yes.
Yeah, and wouldn't you say he's well-dressed?
Well, the length of the trousers...
The length of trousers is challenging, but...
Even by your standards, yeah. I would say they're too short.
Yeah, any trousers I wear would be short.
And honestly, that's only the bit you can see. The rest of it was pretty bad as well.
All right. Well... Keep snapping him in your slightly scary fashion, Sid, and perhaps we'll be able to complete the picture.
But James, it's not my snapping that's slightly scary fashion, it's that guy.
Oh, yeah, I like the way you turn that around. Nice one, Sid, that's fantastic. Well, listen, enjoy the rest of your train journey too.
Oh, now you are cracking up. I think I might have lost you.
Yeah.
Oh, no, hello.
Yeah, where are you going to, Sid?
I'm going to Barcelona.
Ah, lovely. All right, and why?
A whole series of reasons. I'm hoping that over the next 2 days I'll rack up five or six different meetings, stroke interviews, stroke kind of pieces of information searching.
All right. Well, enjoy your time in Barcelona. Let's hope it's productive, Sid, and that you'll find time to talk to us on Thursday for our special end of, well, last show before Christmas pod.
Yeah, fantastic. I will speak to them.
Thanks, Sid.
Cheers.
Buen viaje. Yeah. Anyway, ooh, that's exciting, isn't it, Raul? Hat trick this weekend, Sid was saying.
It is true that the debate about him should come up because he's been really in quite devastating form. He looks very fresh, doesn't look like a player who's been around for quite a while.
How old
seems
he?
To have the hunger back. 34, I think I'm right in saying.
Oh, only 34.
Yeah, but for a striker, that's, you know, not young. And he's been so good that Schalke, despite having the prospect of having to pay €7 million for him next season because he's currently on €7 million, two of which are still being paid by Madrid, but that deal run comes to an end in the summer. So Raul has made no indication that he wants to play for less money. Having said that, Schalke are now so enthralled by his recent performances that they want to keep him for longer, perhaps even offer him some kind of a representative role afterwards, perhaps even a coaching role. So he's really become incredibly popular, both with the Gelsenkirchen supporters but also in the Bundesliga on the whole.
All right. What about their business of trying to sign Lukas Podolski? Is that in any way contingent on Raul not staying or what?
Well, it was they linked themselves to Podolski, which was a bit strange. And Podolski kind of shot it down saying, if I'm moving, I'll only move abroad.
Oh, all right.
So Gelsenkirchen is only about 45 minutes away from Cologne, doesn't quite... even by Podolski standards, who loves Cologne so much that everything else is kind of sort of far away, is not quite abroad. So that would rule them out.
Well, interesting then that he would think about going abroad, given that, you know, even moving to the next
town. Yeah, well, he said he's both him and Joachim Löw have come out and saying Lukas Podolski is a much more mature player and man and ready for the next step. Now, the interesting thing for him was, of course, that on the back of these great performances and all these fantastic goals he scored, he faced Bayern Munich, his former club, on Friday night. And it was the sort of game that made you realise perhaps why he would do well to move, because Ståle Solbakken in the Norwegian coach of Cologne lined them up in a, I think Süddeutsche called it 4-5-5-0-5 formation. So they were incredibly defensive, more or less 10 at the back. You know, he was just completely isolated and it must have been really frustrating for him. He had no chance. Bayern won 3-0 despite having Frank Ribery sent off after 30 minutes.
All right. It's a rough weekend for Frank Ribery, of course.
It was, because he woke up to the news on Friday that his former agent was successful in a lawsuit. He sued him for loss of income when he changed agency, etc. It comes to around about €3 million, which does not make a Merry Christmas.
No.
Well,
for the agent.
Well, for the agent it does. For Frank Ribery it doesn't, but then he's Muslim, so perhaps it doesn't really matter to him that much.
All right. Good. As the Bundesliga prepares to go into hibernation, for how long is it? How long is the winter break?
It's a short one this year. They're back mid-January already.
All right, okay. But what's the situation then? Have we got a midweek round coming up or not? Or have they done?
No, that's it. Bayern finished the year in the only position that's acceptable to them, which is top. Dortmund still looking strong, though, their second. And Schalke, by virtue of their win in third, followed by Gladbach, who have their best season in 35 years. So a real renaissance for the Foles, who, of course, have had a fantastic team back in the 70s, but haven't really done much since.
Of course. Bayer Leverkusen, who I think in the meantime are down in sixth, drew Barcelona in the Champions League last 16. What was the reaction to that in Germany?
The reaction in Germany was goodbye, Leverkusen. It was nice to have you. And that sort of was backed up by the performance. At home to Nuremberg, a lowly side, a relegation material, 3-0 they lost at home. In a defeat that was so abject that the sort of lingering discontent with Robin Dutt, the manager, came to the fore. Rudi Völler, the sporting director, said, everything has to come onto the table, up for debate. Things are wrong and we all need to discuss this over the winter break. So I think Dutt might not be around by the time Barcelona roll in. Interesting enough, the Leverkusen server crashed after the draw came out because so many people wanted to get the tickets.
Rafael, it's your last appearance.
Ever?
No, hopefully not. It's the last Bundesliga chat before the big winter break. So throw us one or two other little bits.
Well, Markus Babbel, the Hertha manager, was sadly fired today. Not very surprisingly. It was a very, very strange situation because according to him, he had told the board that he was not going to renew his contract over the summer, back in November. The board have been publicly saying, we're waiting for an answer, why doesn't he tell us? You know, we need to know what's going on. So he was seen as somebody who's like divvying and not giving an answer. So he finally lost his cool and said, look, I've been telling them for weeks now, I'm not doing this. I don't know why they cannot... why they can't acknowledge that. And sort of both sides accused each other of lying. With the result that he's been fired. Skibbe is coming back from Turkey to take over.
Jesper Skibbe?
No.
What's it?
I think his name is Michael.
Oh, okay.
Skibbe.
I don't know who Jesper Skibbe is, but is there a Jesper Skibbe? Anybody know any Jesper Skibbe?
Probably one.
Is he darts? Is he a darts player?
You might have him in the next round.
Jesper Skibbe. All right, listeners, if you know who I'm talking about, do let me know.
So anyway,
the other thing that you wanted to talk about was Bayern and Basel.
Yeah, interesting for a couple of reasons, because A, there is a smallish conspiracy theory going around that Paul Breitner, who UEFA in their wisdom chose to draw the lots, he is, of course, a Bayern employee, but also the representative for the final, the ambassador, chose Basel on purpose, or I should say Bayern on purpose when Basel were drawn first. You can make up your mind yourself. It's on YouTube. The other thing is, on Friday, FIFA announced that all Swiss teams, including Basel, might be kicked out and banned from football unless the Swiss FA take action against Sion. Sion's crime, as it were, was to go to a regular court in a dispute with the Swiss FA, which is, of course, in direct contravention of FIFA regulations.
FIFA demand that they give them 3-0 defeats in all the matches that they fielded at least one of the six players that they signed in the when they were supposedly under a transfer ban, which is why the dispute begins.
Yeah, so the upshot of that is, you know, what would happen to Basel? And there is this fanciful suggestion that Man United might be reinstalled. I don't believe that is
at all a possibility. So you think Swiss FA is going to cave on this?
There are two issues. Right. A, I think they will cave. Yes. And B, even if they wouldn't, I don't think there's any suggestion that United somehow magically take that place. They'll just give them a bye.
Okay. Interesting. All very interesting. Thanks, Raphael, for that. Right. Well, so to come a little bit more. Oh, yeah.
So I just wanted to ask, how would Breitner have picked the correct ball?
Well, if you see the draw, I mean, Basel get drawn first, and then there were, I think, four or five possible opponents, one of which was Bayern. So you see the other UEFA guy just picking those five balls out and pacing in a ball and then shaking them just a little bit. And Breitner all the time, you know, you might think maybe he's purposely looking away or something. He really watches those balls like a hawk and then goes straight to one of them.
So it's like find the lady.
It's, I just hope that UEFA are smart enough that when it comes to the next draw, if Breitner's still in it by then, to have somebody slightly more neutral. because I don't think it's a wise move to...
Oh, dear. These Continentals, eh? They're hijinks. We'll hear more about similar strange goings-on. Well, not that similar, actually, but strange goings-on in Italy very, very shortly with a bit of a Serie A roundup. And, of course, we'll be turning our attention to those big midweek Premier League matches. Woof. Part three, James Horncastle, Italy. Fantastic. What's been happening this weekend? Let's see, 17 people, including former Atalanta captain and Italy midfielder Christian Doni, were arrested on Monday in connection with the match-fixing and betting scandal. But in other news, what a game that was between Napoli and Roma.
Yeah, indeed. Although I think Roma were quite fortunate in the goals they scored. Lamella across, fumbled by De Sanctis in the back of the net. Simplicio's third was a shot from outside of the box, which was deflected in. But yeah, it was a good performance generally from Roma.
It's their best performance of the season. What a week it's been for them. With all those injuries and everything, they get a draw against Juve, and now they win at Naples.
4 points from six, in which they weren't expected by many to get any because of the injuries and suspensions they've had. There was the Christmas party in midweek where Totti said, I've been thinking about leaving.
We all say things we regret at Christmas parties.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it was quite harsh because I think after he'd missed the penalty against Juventus, he'd been confronted in the street by three or four yobs whilst he was with his kids. And it shook him up a bit. And he assisted Osvaldo's goal yesterday. So Roma are... I think level on points with Napoli now, but the sort of big deal was more that there's a beautiful title race opening up. The top four kind of separated from the rest of the pack. Lazio and Udinese put on a good show. It's a sort of top four game yesterday. It was finished 2-2, and Closer scored, I think, his 11th goal of the season for Lazio. Very much a hero there.
Miroslav Closer, eh, Rafael?
Really exciting, and he's put Serie A back on the radar as far as Germany is concerned. They bought the rights, Sky, in Germany, and they're showing
all from
it.
Well,
he's got a lot to do with it, and it's sort of the mirror watch and mirror this and mirror that. Per Mertesacker doesn't quite generate the same level of excitement, strangely enough. But
he does in the Arsenal defence.
Yeah. But, so there you go, that was a 2-2 draw at the Stadio Olimpico, which means that Udinese are now tied with Milan, just 2 points behind Juve, and Udinese host Juventus, what is it, Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday night.
Wednesday night in Friuli. Well, that's really exciting then, because, and everybody's now saying, ooh, could Udinese be the new Verona, you know, who won the title, the Miracle of Verona, etc., back in 85?
Yeah, 85. Yeah. But usually when they've had a season like the last one, they go back into mid-table because, you know, they sold Zapata, Inla and Sanchez, but instead they've managed to be very consistent.
Wow, that sounds really, really exciting. Four teams in 4 points and Inter arriving, you know, behind as well.
Yeah. Inter have won five of their last six games.
Yeah.
They've been playing really ugly, awful football.
Right.
But Zanetti's likened them to Jaws, doing the durn it. They're coming up behind. They're going to...
Oh, I wish I'd seen that interview.
Yeah.
Did he do the music and everything?
I think he did, yeah.
Fantastic. Is that on YouTube, James? I'm not kidding. I want to see Javier Zanetti doing it.
Maybe he actually played a cello. That would be just for added effect.
Jaws the fish or Jaws the James Bond villain?
Well, clearly.
Jaws the fish, yeah.
That's fantastic. Really, really interesting.
It would be quite funny if he went, we've been playing like Jaws. But tell us more about this betting scandal, James.
There's not much to hear, to be honest. No, to be fair, this is just the one from before, no? I mean, it's the usual thing in Italy.
Keep track.
Yeah. You had the one that we were talking about before, the Atalanta one. And as with Calciopoli, you have the sporting trial and then the police kick into gear. And this is just the police kicking into gear. The news here... Sorry, you were about to say this.
It's the magistrates from Cremona who are handling this case, if you like. They've gone through a whole another set of wiretaps. They've followed up a lot of the leads they had when the preliminary investigation opened. And the reason why these 17 arrests have taken place is that there seems to be some sort of international link, certainly with Singapore as being the organisers of this betting scandal per se. Cristiano Doni again is the sort of figurehead of this.
So he's been arrested.
He's been arrested.
Other players as well, including Luigi Sartor.
Yes.
I remember the first ever episode of Gazzetta Football Italia. This is way back in 1992. Featured a piece on the Juventus youth team. And there was a fresh-faced Luigi Sartor in there, and he was regarded as one of the... Maria Grazia Castriotta, a very scary-looking woman, did, in, you know, in a nice way.
Yeah, because I think he was the... Is he the youngest Juventus player ever to play in Europe, I think?
Is he?
Yeah, I think he was, yeah.
Well, he's now in the clink.
Yeah.
He's meant to be in the middleman between Singapore and Signori.
Exactly. He's meant to be the cashier.
Oh, I'm shaking my head over here, Barry. I'm shaking my head.
He's innocent until proven guilty.
Well,
he?
I know.
Yeah. So don't shake your head yet.
All right, I won't shake my head yet. Now, Udinese taking on Juve this midweek in the Premier League's action all the way as well. All sorts of big games. Aston Villa taking on Arsenal. Do you see there's a story that Darren Bent went out doing his Christmas shopping during Aston Villa's game and that everyone's saying that as a result he's going to be himself somebody else's Christmas shopping, if you know what I mean? They're going to sell him.
Yeah, I don't quite see the relation. I think it's a smart move. While everyone's in the stadium,
yeah.
You go to the centre of town.
All right then. Anyway, so he wasn't there for their defeat at the weekend, and they're taking on Arsenal. Some people posting in on the whole Aston Villa situation. How chronic are Villa, says Matthew Vennard, and would you go shopping like Darren Bent faced with the choice of doing that or watching them?
Villa watching Aston Villa is probably the one thing that's less appealing than running the Christmas shopping gauntlet the week before Christmas. Mm. But they were abject yesterday. Their defending is astonishingly bad, and the two goals they conceded were both from corners. And you would think Alex McLeish would, having been, you know, quite an accomplished centre half himself, would have them sorted out. But I suppose if players don't concentrate, there's very little he can do about it.
Is it a concentration thing? Some people have mentioned the whole notion of zonal marking confusing them.
But I don't think it was zonal marking they were trying to do. They just, like, Richard Dunn had a man to mark at the first corner and didn't just let him get away from it. So I don't think it was zonal marking they were practicing, but I could be mistaken.
Hmm. Well, I'm not sure what it was they were practicing. But
well, it wasn't very good anyway.
It's not looking good for Villa, though, although they're still up there in 10th place, mysteriously.
Well, that's the thing. I suppose that's indicative of just how poor some teams in the Premier League are.
All right, then. Arsenal, anyway, looking to... start a new unbeaten run. Hey, some people suggesting, I think this was on the telly, that Thierry Henry might come back. You know, all the Major League Soccer players are turning up for two months. That he might return to Arsenal.
It's nonsense.
It's nonsense, is it, Raphael?
He might come and train a bit.
Okay.
He's not going to play.
What about this story that Landon Donovan might return to Everton?
That's confirmed.
Ah. That's good, isn't it? Yeah, it's lovely. He did so well. He didn't come last year. The season before, he did really well.
He did okay, and Everton can certainly do some creativity up front. Why not?
All right, Everton taking on Swansea this midweek. Newcastle up against West Brom. Man City Stoke mentioned that. Wigan have Liverpool. How do you feel about that one?
Liverpool's record at Wigan is not good. They drew last season, lost the season before, and drew the season before that. So they haven't won in their last three visits.
But this was before the King was back in town.
Yeah.
And their away form has generally been quite good this season.
Liverpool's, that's true.
Everyone's been trotting at us. They've hit the woodwork 17 times this year. Got the best defence in the league. Yeah, if a few of those 17 goals had gone in, they'd probably be a lot higher.
Well, that's true. Although this game will happen after we'll finally get a verdict, unless they postpone it again, on the whole Suarez everything. Which, am I right in saying that it's almost inevitable he's going to pick up some kind of suspension, Suarez, in this?
No.
That's the way it's being talked about.
Why?
Well, people keep saying that he'll get some kind of... It might just be a slap on the wrist, but it'll probably be one game suspension or something. I'm delighted to hear it if it's not, because there's no reason...
Well, I'm not aware of the verdict being a foregone conclusion, but maybe you have better sources.
I don't. What I do have is a picture from somebody who tweeted in at the side of a Uruguayan lorry advertising some snack food for children called Negrito. So there you go. Just to illustrate...
That really solves the riddle.
Well, it backs up the theory that apparently it's Suarez's defence that this is a word that is commonplace in Uruguay and doesn't have negative connotations.
Yeah, well, context is everything, isn't it?
Certainly is.
If you called me a dirty Jew...
Yes?
It wouldn't be derogatory.
Well, it depends if you've been washing or not. I don't know. That's certainly a subject I want to get into right now. Sadly, we don't have time.
Actually, sorry, just on the subject
what do you want, you dumb Mick?
Sorry, if I just put down this pig I have under my arm and hit you with my knobbly stick. No, in France, there's a race robbery. Now, an assistant referee has been accused of racially abusing an Auxerre player, Kamel Chafni, who's a Moroccan. Chafni alleges that the linesman called him an Arab, or just Arab. And when the player went to complain to the referee, he was given a yellow card. He continued complaining, got another yellow card and sent off.
That's typical of the French, isn't it?
Why?
I was just making an ironically
racist
generalisation. Well, that's horrible. I have to say, if that's true, that's horrible.
Well, an investigation has been launched and is ongoing.
Right, but we shouldn't raise the subject until the investigation's in French football. You're not allowed to talk about these things unless people are found guilty. And, of course, they won't be. Now, QPR taking on Sunderland. I tell you what, what's going on at Sunderland? Bentner and Catamol arrested after Catamol was practising kicking things in the centre of town, notably cars in the city centre, yeah? What was Nicholas Bentner aiming at?
God knows. I mean, I wouldn't like if I had a car for Catamol to kick it because it'd stay kicked.
It certainly would.
But Bentner issued... it's been a bad time for Nicholas. He had a spot of bother in a pizzeria in Copenhagen last... I think he left his wallet at home or something, and he was pulling the, you know, don't you know who I am, trying to get a free
We've
pizza.
All done it.
And eventually, someone captured it on mobile phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So eventually, I think two girls who were there, the pizzeria owner didn't care who he was. Mm. You're not getting a free pizza off me, and. Eventually, two girls, I think, gave him some money to pay for his pizza. But he issued a sort of a craven letter of apology for his myriad recent sort of incidents that he's involved in, none of which involve scoring goals, which is a shame.
Now, what else have we got? That's it. Oh, right. No, and then on Tuesday, of course, the big one, Blackburn-Bolton. Let's have a big finale to this week's podcast discussing that match. Bolton coming into this game... after their defeat at Fulham, Blackburn got beaten at home by West Brom. I've got a little note here, the Jim Morrison goal. Will it see Steve Keane shown the doors? Some brilliant motif. Yeah.
It was a great goal.
It was a good goal,
James
wasn't it?
Morrison, the singer-songwriter, did well. We're recording on Monday morning. There's quite a good chance Steve Keane may be out of the job before that game kicks
really?
Off. And I've seen in certain quarters that Alan Shearer is being linked as a potential replacement. What with him having done such a good job rescuing Newcastle.
Where did you see that, Barry?
I saw it in the Daily Mail, among other places.
Hmm? Yeah,
but Shearer is obviously a Blackburn legend because of helping them win the championship in 95. I've tried to stick up for Keane and it's been increasingly difficult, but he has to go. I'm worried about his own sanity and mental health because I don't think any person could ship the kind of abuse he's taken. Week in, week out.
Have you not read the message board?
Without letting it affect them. And, yeah, but these are, you know, actual people screaming at you, you know, not. And the team morale seems to be at absolute rock bottom. They're having no luck at all, and he needs to go.
All right, and is it as much of a precipice that Owen Coyle is standing on as Steve Keane is?
I don't think so, but... I mean, if Bolton were to lose that game, they would be... Well, they're 5 points adrift at the moment. 5 points behind Wolves, who are fourth from bottom. And they're not scoring goals. Their defence is a rabble. And you have this stat, isn't it? Just one team has ever stayed up after being bottom at Christmas. And it's hard to see where Bolton are going to get a win. And surely if they can't get one against Blackburn, then...
I don't think they've drawn any other games. It's either it's just win or lose all the time. And they just know... Is that the case?
They've won one and... Well, sorry, in their last six, they've won one and lost five.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no half measures. There doesn't seem to be any sort of, I don't know, mental toughness, resilience. Well, maybe it's just morale going on the floor.
But. Well, there seems to be all sorts of problems there at Bolton. We'll have... the latest on that clash and the managerial race to take over on the Bolton and Blackburn benches in Thursday's pod, which will be the last one pre-Christmas. you know, because of all that German going on holiday, Italy going on holiday, all that sort of stuff, we're going to take a bit of a holiday ourselves. So make sure you join us for that special last show before Christmas magic feeling on Thursday, as I mentioned. In the meantime, many thanks, James Horncastle, for being here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you, Raphael Honigstein.
Pleasure.
And Barry Glendening.
A pleasure.
And Matt Hill, who will be back for a special swan song, his last pre-Christmas pod appearance. Magnificent. On Thursday, I think, as I mentioned. Good. Have a lovely week until then. See you on Thursday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.